Wait for it.
Juicy, juicy, juicy. Geeks Beer Podcast, or episode 21 this week.
Oh, you're counting again.
Yeah, no, I went back and confirmed last week, and that was episode 20. So, and we were supposed to have Eric on again with us today, but then he couldn't, so he's not now. We are going to cover a topic that is kind of near and dear to his heart and the product of years of evolution in our coffee program, and that's around what kind of coffee we're looking for when we source coffee. And we really sum it up in three words, and Christian, those would be...
Those three words are sweet, clean, and juicy. And I guess by type of coffee that we're looking for, it's not necessarily a quality, it's not necessarily an origin, but when we finally taste the coffee and release it, we want to have those three characteristics kind of be dominant in the entire flavor experience.
Yeah, and the hard thing is that they're not terribly quantifiable aspects of coffee, like, because we think you can have a coffee that exemplifies those things on the light end of the roast spectrum and on the dark end of the roast spectrum. So what we want to do during this time is to briefly walk through each one of those things and explain what we mean by a coffee is sweet, or what we mean by a coffee is clean, and what we mean by a coffee is juicy. All right, so let's start with sweet. If a coffee is sweet, oftentimes when you pick up a cup of black coffee, regardless of what kind of coffee or where it's from, rarely do you go, that's really sweet. But at the same time, you can also pick up variances in the sweetness levels of certain coffees. So Christian, when we say a coffee is sweet, what exactly does that mean?
I usually attribute sweetness to body in terms of characteristics, because when you have like a high viscosity, you notice it, especially on the front of your tongue, it really does linger there. But sweetness is just a basic characteristic of the overall cup feel. And you can achieve good sweetness in coffee by sourcing really sweet coffee. And that requires a lot of cupping and finding coffees that really do give you that really nice... I'm trying not to mix our terms, but we're looking for a good body that's really viscous and kind of really coats the entire tongue. But also when you're roasting the coffee, you have to roast with sweetness in mind, because you can roast it for a lot of acidity, go really fast, and do a really light roast. And I don't know, I've had a couple of coffees the past year that have not been terribly sweet, but have been very acidic and almost very vegetal. And that's good for some people. That's good for some roasters. But we're really committed to having a really sweet cup of coffee. So when you taste it, you get that instant hit of viscosity. And almost to the point of when it cools, if you hadn't added sugar to the coffee, it should taste slightly sweet.
And I think it helps to understand sweetness in coffee by hitting a little bit more on what you were talking about when sweetness isn't there. It's sweetness in contrast to excessive bitterness in a really light roasted coffee. I would use the analogy of like an underripe banana versus a ripe banana. A ripe banana certainly is sweeter, but it's because you've lost sort of this tangy medicinal quality that was in the underripe banana. All that's been converted into sugar. And it's, you can almost view the roast spectrum as kind of a ripeness spectrum as well, because an under-roasted coffee tastes kind of like an underripe banana. It's medicinal, almost tastes like grass. Some cases it very much so tastes like grass. But as you continue that roast spectrum and caramelize a little bit more sugars, that medicinal quality tends to go away, and you get a more full, round, viscous, slick, sweet mouthfeel and even taste profile.
Something that we do when we go to origin in order to make sure our coffees have good sweetness, and there are ways of actually doing this, and especially when you can build farm-to-cup relationships and go hang out with your farm partners, you can actually see how sweet the coffee is when it's coming off the tree. So, yeah, it's not a one-to-one causation that naturally a sweet cherry is going to have a sweet coffee bean, but we very often correlate it. And what you can do is you can take a Brix meter, and if anyone at home brews beer or makes wine at home, you've seen one of these Brix refractometers before. It's just a little scope, and it has a little meter that has a 0 to 30 rating on it, and you can actually take some of the juice of a coffee cherry, put it on that Brix refractometer, hold that up to the light, and you get a sense for what the Brix reading is. And I can say that almost all the coffee that we buy is probably 20 Brix or higher, and you can tell that by, one, taking a reading, or two, going and tasting the coffee cherries, seeing these ripe red cherries. And good producers will do a great job having high Brix coffees, and that translates to a sweeter cup of coffee.
So what was the highest Brix reading you've ever seen at Origin?
The highest Brix reading that I've ever seen was a 28, and that's a very, very sweet cherry and a sweet coffee. And it was at San Sebastian in Antigua, Guatemala. And it was a 17 or an 1800 Bourbon variety, I remember. And there's some coffees that have, they taste like they're super sweet, but they have some acidity in it, and you start to notice the aromatic, and sweetness is a good carrier for those other characteristics, so you notice a lot of mouthfeel. But the more Brix, the more intense the cherry and the more intense the flavor. And I often don't get a chance to take very many Brix readings because I'm notorious for giving my Brix meters away. I give them to producers all the time.
Yeah, I think there's one in Tarazu in Costa Rica. Where else have you
there's
left?
There's one in West Valley.
West Valley. Where else? Didn't we send some to somebody?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We sent six of them to Ben in Long Miles, at Long Miles in Burundi.
Okay.
Which is coming out last week.
So this will go a week from today. So, yeah, 3 days ago.
All right. So, and the Burundi that just launched 3 days ago, you should check that out. That's that coffee.
Sweet. What kind of goes hand in hand with sweetness in coffee on the production level is cleanliness. So often you don't see a clean coffee that's not terribly sweet, and sometimes the inverse is true as well. But we talk about a coffee being sweet, and then we talk about it being clean. And this is probably the most difficult thing to describe to a customer because they don't know exactly what a clean coffee is. So, Christian, I am a noob, and I'm listening to two guys talk on a podcast that's recorded in the basement of a local roastery. And I hear you use the word clean, and I say, well, I don't know anything. What does that mean when you say a coffee is clean?
So, cleanliness refers to any kind of off flavor inside of the coffee. And the most common uncleanly flavor we see in coffee is a woody or burlappy flavor, which is often comes about when coffee is not dried or picked correctly. There are other types of cleanliness issues that we see less often here at Stone Creek because we do a very good job sourcing our coffee. But you can have coffees that have gone beyond the point of sweet to vinegary. That's not good. You can have things that are kind of have a moldy, musty flavor to it. You can have things that are highly phenolic. Phenolic, if you drink scotch, scotch has phenolic flavors. This kind of peat mossy, really interesting, to me it's almost astringent in flavor, but some people really, really like that. It's a reason why we tend to stay away from wet-hulled coffees. Wet-hulled coffees are typical of Indonesia and Sumatra. We just don't really like the flavor profile, so we tend to stay away from them.
Yeah, that's a really interesting prospect, too. I think we were going through iterations of the podcast when we started talking about scotch and the flavor compounds in scotch and how those are generally considered a defect in coffee, because I absolutely love scotch, but I really despise coffees that tend to have that high phenolic taste profile, like a lot of Sumatrans and some Papua New Guinea. So interesting juxtaposition in terms of flavor compounds. It's like people who don't like to mix their food. Like I don't want my corn to touch my potatoes. Like, I like them separately, but mix them together and it's all over.
Yeah, a lot of people blame the variety for the cleanliness of the cup, and I'm learning that that's just not true.
Yeah, and like, I think our trip to Guatemala this year taught us a little bit about that.
Guatemala, I saw it in El Salvador, I saw it in Honduras.
Colombia.
Yeah, Colombia. So there are these types of coffees. It's a specific variety called a Catamor, which is a hybrid of a Timor with a Catura, or a Timor and another a type of coffee that are hybrid together. And Timors are interesting because it has some Robusta genetics, and Robusta is a completely different species. It does not taste good. This Robusta genetics gives it some really, really awesome plant. It gives it some really interesting characteristics, as it has a stronger root system. It's more resistant to disease. And when we were cupping these coffees, when we were in Guatemala and Costa Rica, we were noticing that the cup profile doesn't really change that much. It may just be that they were grown at producers who didn't know what they were doing, or maybe there was just a weird microclimate that it didn't taste good. And there's this stigma behind Catamores that they're not good. And especially in Colombia, we've had Castillo, Tabi, and the Colombia variety that have just been phenomenal, at least for us this year.
And to take a step back, a lot of these varieties, Catamore, the Colombia heirlooms, Castillo, they tend to get a bad rap in the specialty world because, well, if they're not grown right, then they, of course, taste bad. And a lot of bad coffee comes out of Colombia and some of these other countries. But to equate that taste profile with the particular variety we're seeing is a bit of a misnomer, because if it's grown and cultivated and produced well, it can actually be pretty awesome. So let's get back to the defects, like what can show up in an uncleanly coffee,
mm-hmm.
a coffee that hasn't taken a bath. You mentioned sort of phenolic flavors, moldy, mildewy,
woody,
burlappy. Yeah. What are some of the other causes and ways that an unclean coffee manifests itself?
So as I mentioned, you can have a coffee that ferments, and this fermenty, vinegary coffee happens when the coffee is over-fermented, when it's in tanks, when it's picked overripe on the tree, or when water gets onto the coffee as it's drying. A lot of producers have problems with this, and they funnel it off to different channels, but some people still try to sell it as specialty coffee. And every once in a while, a specialty roaster buys it because they think it's special, and then we kind of look at them funny, like, what is this?
When I was in Kansas City last week, by the time you listen to this, 3 weeks ago, on our way out of town, our lead barista, Sam Brown, he got a Kalita wave of a particular coffee. I think it was from Costa Rica. But we saw on the label, it seemed to be a pretty dope sounding coffee. When it was finally brewed and he tasted it, he was rather disappointed because it tasted like a blueberry threw up. I mean, like the coffee was left to sit and sit and sit and sit, and the fermentation process just went totally awry. Which I've noticed increasingly, like, people have a different acceptance level for this. Some people are really sensitive to the fermenty flavors in their coffee, our owner Eric being one of them, and then other people would just like, oh, give me more of that, like the more intense sort of face warping vinegar, as you have said, flavor profile I can get, I'll take it, I'll pass. Like, I like a nicely balanced natural, some Kenyan fermentation if it's done right, but if it goes overboard, it's hard to drink. It's like drinking a cup of balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
Yeah.
A couple other defects that we see that are pretty common. You can get kind of an earthy cup of coffee. And if coffee is dried near dust or earth or dried on dirt, you can tend to pull on that kind of flavor characteristic. And it's not good. Another defect that's a little harder to spot, and it's typical in Rwanda or Burundi coffees, is potato. And potato defect tastes just like it sounds. It's like you took a cut potato, put it in your mouth, and you're drinking your coffee. It's pretty gross. And this is something that's really hard for us to spot.
Yeah.
And it's a pain in the butt because you can have this beautiful coffee, then all of a sudden you get one bean in the entire brew batch, and your entire batch tastes like potato. The worst offender for me is Rio, and this is a defect that happens in Brazil, and some people really like this woody. It is, so it was once described to me, someone put it perfectly, it's like your car mechanic got in the car and was sitting next to you and is wearing like a leather jacket. That's what this defect tastes like. And they don't really know if it's a microbe that gets in the coffee or if it's a bacteria or something turns on it. But it spreads like wildfire through the entire batch. And we had a container of coffee that went bad on us, and it was full of Rio. And man, I couldn't do anything with it. Like, it was just, it was terrible. And I never, if you ever get a chance to take a cupping class and you can taste Rio in a controlled environment, do it. It'll change your life.
But not necessarily, but in a good way.
Don't go and buy one of those coffees, because it will it's aggressive.
So cleanliness really being the summation of the absence, I'm going to form my own theorem around that. Where nothing gets in the way of what that coffee has to offer. It's a coffee where the producer hasn't jacked it up. It didn't get messed up in shipping. We didn't misroast it, which is another aspect of uncleanliness that I'm going to kick back to Christian.
Yes, I was just thinking about that as well. This is a little debatable depending on the roaster, and it's a little debatable depending on your style of roasting. Dark roasting is not uncleanliness. Dark roasting can be clean, but you do it in a way that you don't impart negative flavors to the cup. You don't smoke it up. You don't scorch it. You don't tip it. You take care to allow the flavors that you want to come out in the roast. And so for some of our lighter roasts, it's more of a balance of acidity and sweetness. For some of our darker roasts, it's the development of spice and body along with that sweet viscosity. And if you don't pay attention, it's very easy to screw it up. There are a lot of people who are coffee roasters out there that make some mistakes sometimes. And it happens. You learn. You learn, you make mistakes, and you get better. You get better. We made a ton of mistakes a long time ago. I'll say that much. Mm. Our coffee used to be like a 24-minute roast profile sometimes. Finish temperature of like 450 degrees. That's a super long, we call that a baked defect. You lose all sweetness. You lose all acidity. You kind of have this cardboardy type coffee. We don't have that anymore. It wasn't good.
Juicy. Probably my favorite word to say. It ranks up there with moist. But when we talk about a coffee being sweet and clean, that's not enough. It's not a very dynamic cup of coffee. So we add this final component that really kind of helps make coffee special, and that is a coffee being juicy. I think juicy is the easiest component of coffee to communicate to people who don't speak specialty coffee jargon. Christian, juicy.
So I think juicy refers to, you can think about it like when you bite into a fresh green apple. You have this sudden burst of sweetness on your tongue, but you also have like a hit of acidity that hits a side, and it's this total refreshing sensation. And we're looking to do this in all of our coffees. And even in our darker roasts, we're looking for this little bit of acidity. And acidity is not a bad thing. And I think juicy is the best term we've come up with, because we used to use the term brightness. And I see other people use brightness. And other people are like, I don't want a bright coffee. I'm like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Juicy can manifest itself in lots of different ways. So say you want a quote-unquote low acidity coffee. Okay, we'll steer you away from a light roasted Central America coffee that has a lot of citric acidity. But I might move you towards like a Colombian that has a lot of malic acidity, that has a little bit more roast on it. And that malic acidity will actually manifest itself as body. Or if you have a coffee that's highly lactic, again, it'll manifest itself as body and mouthfeel and feel really good on your tongue, especially with a little bit of roast. It's a very complex mouthfeel, but it's something that a lot of people appreciate. And you can still have a juicy coffee that has roast on it. Also, juicy coffee, as we mentioned before, differs than just light roasted coffee, because you can have a coffee that is super acidic, and I would argue that it's not juicy. Because in order to have the experience of that juiciness, you need sweetness juxtaposed with acidity and mouthfeel.
Yeah, and it really all has to come together. I think some people would err on the side of acidity, some people being high-end specialty coffee roasters, because they feel like that's quote-unquote getting out of the way of the coffee. I've heard that expression a lot, which it's not bad and it's not wrong. I think that is sort of getting out of the way of the coffee, but you sort of lose what you can bring to the party. You're letting that coffee exist in its sort of vegetal form, choosing only to highlight the acidity and not the sweetness and body that that coffee could also offer. I think a good coffee that exemplifies this is the Colombia Pasto, which by the time you hear this, unfortunately, it'll have been replaced by the Burundi Buquea. But it was...
Nope.
Yeah.
No, it'll be around for another couple weeks.
Oh, cool. Well, never mind. You can still get it.
You should have about 2 weeks left when you hear this.
Sweet. So, good luck out there. But I think this coffee represented a coffee that wasn't just acidity forward, but was still juicy. So it had some roast, some chocolate, but then as the coffee cooled, as you get halfway through your cup, it gets big and syrupy and juicy, like a really ripe plum or peach with blackberries. And this flavor profile, I don't think you would get if the roast profile was different. Christian, how did you approach the Colombia Pasto as you sought to bring a roast profile to this coffee?
So I found this coffee on the cup and table in Colombia, and I liked it because it had a really big acidity to it and a nice body. And when I was dialing in the roast, I went back and forth a lot because this coffee as a lighter roast was phenomenal. But as Drew said, there's just something about this coffee. When you take it up one more roast level, it has this really interesting viscosity and sweetness to it, and almost this complexity of fruit that you wouldn't get at a lighter roast level. And also, it sits in our seasonal line, and a seasonal is more of an accessible coffee. We like to approach that like that. If it's in a lab, I can put a light roast on it, and you know, folks, those uber coffee geeks will really like that. But in the seasonal line, it needs to be something that is very approachable. And if you have a really sweet Guatemala that can take a light roast and is naturally approachable, a Colombia might be a little too aggressive for the main part of the demographic that we serve here. So what we're looking for is something that works really well in an all-around coffee and tastes really good on an auto-drip machine. And something I've been thinking about, and I think a topic that we could do in the future after I write my article, is focusing on roast profiles that work really well for the mainstream coffee drinker. And it's something that we don't normally talk about as an industry, but I think it's something that we should approach quickly and think about who our customer is. You are not going to see McDonald's serving like gourmet food anytime soon because they built their customer base on the Big Mac. In the same way, your best restaurants are not going to be serving Big Macs anytime soon because they serve a particular type of customer base, and you need to be true to the kind of company that you are. We are a farm-to-cup local Wisconsin company who has a customer base that likes some dark roasted coffees, and so we have that in our line, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if there's someone in Portland or Seattle or Kansas City, for that matter, that loves doing light roasted coffee and your customer base loves that, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Right. I think really the call needs to be for people to be understanding and open-minded. Like, you'd think the coffee industry, the specialty coffee industry, is sort of progressive as it is, would be more open-minded. But once there's sort of a generally accepted standard for specialty coffee, everything else gets kind of thrown by the wayside. And that's a very dangerous thing for an industry, especially as quickly as the standard changes. And in this industry, the standard changes really freaking fast.
It's almost like you need to be the Miles Davis of coffee to be ahead of everything.
You're just always one step ahead.
Always one step ahead. And by the time what you were really good at is cool, it's no longer cool for you. You're already way ahead of it. Mm.
So sweet, clean, and juicy. Christian, give us an overall summary of how these things come together in a light profile, a medium, and then a dark for overall taste experience. And maybe you could even throw in some origin information there.
Yeah. So when we're approaching a light roast with sweet, clean, and juicy, I think this is probably the most straightforward, because you don't really have to take the sugar that far up in roast level. And if you have a good acidity naturally, it works together in a really nice synergy. As you take it to kind of a medium level, you have to balance out the acidity with the sweetness and the complexity of the sugar development at a higher level. So sometimes it means doing a couple different profiles so you really find that balance of sweetness and acidity. at a dark roasted level, you're really looking for that really potent sugar development. So you're almost taking from like a granulated sugar to a caramel to a toffee, like a really dark sugar. And you're looking for a way to balance a little bit of acidity still in the cup, so you have that kind of round flavor. And you also have spicy notes that come out at that point, too. So that really works well. That's like the fourth word I tend to throw in when we're talking about dark roast: the sweet, clean, and juicy, and spicy.
Next time, we're going to talk about coffee hacks. By coffee hacks, we mean you love coffee. Maybe you love specialty coffee. You're a coffee geek. But, I mean, let's face it. Rarely are you out and specialty coffee is available at your friend's house, at that small town where you grew up, when you go home for Christmas. So what are some things maybe you can do as you travel, as you visit places, that can help get your coffee game, you know, up at a respectable level where you can enjoy that coffee? And we're going to be really open-minded with this. This isn't just how can you sneak away and brew an AeroPress in the bathroom? Because there's a level of social acceptability.
You have a story behind this, don't you?
No. But people always talk about going
what
to visit grandma.
Nothing. I was nothing.
People always talk about going to visit grandma. People get really touchy about their coffee. I go out a lot to people's houses, socializing, and people are frustrated or apologetic about their coffee. Like, oh, I know you're in coffee. I'm really sorry about my coffee. I'm like, would you just relax? You're offering me coffee. I'm thankful for it. That said, we all have high standards. So what we're going to do next time is try and provide some hacks to help you still enjoy and experience pretty decent coffee when the going gets tough. Till then, we are geeks.
We are talking coffee.